Hello, and welcome to another Sports Next Door podcast. My name is Owen. Today is Monday, April 15th, and I'm joined, as I always am, by my newly minted 26-year-old friend, my neighbor Max. How's it going, my friend?
You know, my birthday will forever be the second most important thing that happened on April 10th, because you know what topped it this year? OJ Simpson died. Going right into the sports content. Sometimes we pitter-patter around the bush for the first couple minutes, but OJ Simpson died on my birthday. Oh, that is the best birthday present anyone could really ask for, I think. How have you been? Well, I sort of know.
Yeah, we did see each other this weekend for maybe the first time. First time Montreal meetup in person.
First time not in Toronto between pods.
Craziness. Absolute craziness. OJ's wife's killer can, or OJ's wife can rest easy knowing her killer is dead. Yeah, what a way to start the pod. And I'm tired. I've been moving around a lot. I've told you about that. I'm headed out on another work trip coming up next week, but otherwise doing great. Had a fantastic time at your little shindig. It was really cool to meet all your friends. They're great. And had a lot of fun that evening.
They don't listen. You can be honest.
Yeah, that's not true. But I actually did have a fantastic time. And yeah, it was nice to see behind the curtain of the virtual screen.
You know about the door over there. You know about the door over there.
That's about it, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Really cool to see you this weekend. Nice to catch up only 2 days later, but ready to talk about the NBA and the conclusion of the regular season as we have the play-in games kicking off tomorrow evening. We have some storylines about the playoff rounds that are set versus what is still yet to come. We'll talk a little bit of hockey and then a little bit of tennis today on this one. So keeping it simpler for the people. And Max, I'll let you kind of decide where we want to start as the belated birthday man.
We can kick it off with basketball, since that has the most set in stone and is the least speculative, with the regular season officially over yesterday. And we can go east or west. I think the point kind of stands either way, though a lot stronger in the east. You were a couple weeks ahead on the discourse of the year to talk about playoff seeding reward, getting to choose the teams they face. The west is just tough all around. You can make an argument for, I think, 7 of the 10 teams at least to have a shot at the NBA Cup, drawing from a different couple styles of argument. I'm not saying they're all convincing, but they're all there. So just in that kind of division, no matter what, even the first round is going to have some nasty matchups for higher seeded teams. But I think where I want to start is, if you are Tom Thibodeau and the New York Knicks, who have finished the season 2nd in the East, who are you hoping you face? The Miami Heat or the Philadelphia 76ers? It's going to be rough either way, or not the reward you're hoping for in the second round or first round.
Absolutely. And you're
second.
Yeah. And you're hoping that the basketball karma smiles upon you as the kind of the main team out of the three that really tried to win and take this 2 seed and value that home court advantage and value potentially not having to see the Boston Celtics until the conference finals, and just say, it doesn't matter who we're going to play in front of us. We're the better team. We have a home court advantage. And I think if you're the Knicks, you'd probably rather see Philly right now, because Embiid had another injury scare a couple of nights ago, even though he finished the game. And just the track record of his performance in the playoffs and them not being able to get past the second round, and a Miami team that beat you last year in the second round of the playoffs and has immense confidence no matter where they go. I mean, it'd be nice to get that revenge, but as the Knicks, I think you're really just focused on whoever's in front of you, and hopefully you get rewarded for making that push in the East in the final day of these games.
It's interesting because in the first round, I'd almost rather face the Heat. And then in the second round, I'd rather face the 76ers. Yeah. With the 8-game streak the 76ers are on and Embiid just being like such a unique, challenging matchup, I hadn't thought about the injury. I was leaning towards the Heat. I think either way, I'm really excited to see what Jalen Brunson can do this playoffs, especially if he is against Embiid right from the get-go. I remember highlighting a conversation I saw on ESPN a couple months ago just about the Knicks and like what the ceiling on Jalen Brunson is, and that even if he approaches that like 1A, he's kind of still stuck in like a 1B tier where he can't dominate a playoffs, but I think he can dominate a series.
Certainly, against a team like Philadelphia that doesn't necessarily have the all-class perimeter defenders to be able to handle him. And he was really impressive to me because of the kind of prison ball rules that the NBA changed into about 2 months ago now. He hasn't really slowed him down, even as a smaller guy, still has found a way to get to his spots. And he's just so tough and built so strong that he's able to use some of that size and quickness to his advantage at a smaller position and still manage to put up a tremendous productivity. And then also without OG, without Randall, without Mitchell Robinson for a lot of those stretches, it's just really cool to see. And it's a guy that you can't help but root for.
Yeah, like I think I'm kind of hoping to see the Knicks make a deep run on the East side. When I like look, like we talked about this before, like expecting the Boston Celtics to make it out of the East and not really going to doubt until things get seriously hot water for them. But aside from that, aside from just enjoying watching Doc Simmons light teams on fire and then blame them, I'm looking forward to seeing what Jalen Brunson can do these playoffs.
While the Knicks pushed for the 2 seed, the Bucks tried and got embarrassed by the Orlando Magic. They just couldn't create any offense without Giannis. It was rather startling to see. And the Cleveland Cavaliers seemed to resign themselves to taking the night off, even though they had a chance to actually fly into that 3rd seed if they wanted it. And they settled into a loss against the Charlotte Hornets, which was rather embarrassing. Not really a great last game for either one of Milwaukee or Cleveland. And they're settling into a 4-5 matchup with the upstart Orlando Magic. And as a Raptors fan, I have a little bit of negative energy towards Orlando, just with the history of some of their matchups that we came out on the winning end of, luckily, but especially the Aaron Gordon kind of Kawhi matchup, a lot of the trouble that team gave us in the past. DJ Augustine is the name that will live in Raptors heads forever after that game one, but also sparked it all. And then, of course, the Scotty Barnes, Jalen Suggs draft conversation is the one that will follow us here for the next 10 to 12 years between the two of these guys. And Suggs looked a bust very early on and made a tremendous comeback. He's a phenomenal defender at the guard position and works his butt off and rebounds the ball well. And if he can develop into a stronger jump shot, he's going to be a sixth man on a title team. And potentially even a starter. I don't even know if his ceiling is as high as Scotty's, but he could end up being the more productive player between the two of them, or at least the more winning player between the two of them in their careers.
Helps a lot when you go and get a Banchero the next year.
Exactly. And that's where like the rivalry lives, though. Just like naturally, Matthews Line will always be something that people point out, even though that's not much of a discussion anymore. We'll get there in a sec. But a really fun, exciting matchup, a Cleveland team who is a little bit stronger at home, and we get to see the battle of two young talents between Evan Mobley and Paolo Banchero in this first round. And if you like rock fights, if you like defense, this is the number one series for you, because I don't know if either team will score over 100 points in a game in this series with the way that they can defend the ball and where their offense will scuffle from time to time. But it's a big series for Cleveland. I think Mitchell's out the door if they don't win. I think he's out the door either way.
Yeah,
but it's a big series here for this core, because they last year everyone was like, this is the first year of a great growth and they're going to be here around for a long time, and how quickly things change if they don't get any playoff series wins in 2 years. So interesting battle there for us to take a look at.
And they lucked out on the seeding. Like, if you run into Philly or the Heat, the excuses come a lot easier against a Magic team that has not been to the playoffs, with you being a team with more power or more stars, more experience, and more playoff credentials. There's no excuses for the Cavaliers. Anything on Pacers Bucks, or do you want to move to the West?
I mean, it's kind of a similar situation, though. Only out that Milwaukee has Giannis, and
I don't think that's enough.
That's a really, really scary situation. Well, he may not play the whole series.
Yeah,
which is
still,
yeah.
I mean, it's Damian, brutal. You're not winning the finals, but
yeah, Lillard's look bad without Giannis. Middleton's not look great. Lopez has not look great. They've really struggled down the stretch. 3-7 in their last 10, and yeah, I mean, I think they're lucky as well to fall into a matchup against a really young Indiana team getting their first taste of the playoffs. And the thing that's going to really struggle for Milwaukee, is they're going to have to keep the pace down, because if they try to outscore this Indiana team, that's where they're really going to run into trouble. So they're going to have to muck it up. I don't know if that's Damian Lillard's preferred pace. But it's going to be fascinating to see, because I don't think him and Halliburton can contain each other on the perimeter. No. So expect a ton of points in these games.
And then the West, I think, where most of the powerhouse teams, all 10 teams in the postseason, have gone above 500. The Golden State Warriors in last place, still putting up 46 wins on the season, if I'm not mistaken. And like, just a lot of little fun things. Like, we've already seen a playoff series between the Kings and the Warriors, and that is going to kick off the play-in. Talked about getting the Clippers versus the Mavericks again, Luka and Kawhi running it back another time. So like, Kevin Durant is in the playoffs, and that has been like a sidelined story for me, but still really exciting. There's so much here, a bit of like a kid in a candy shop vibe, but not quite sure what to focus on first.
Yeah, it's gold all the way around, but I think we start with the play-in and the Pelicans scuffling down the stretch in their own right, 5-5 in their last 10, falling into the 7 seed, trying to reintegrate Brandon Ingram back into the lineup. And they have to face a team that's owned them all season in the Lakers. It's probably the worst sort of one game matchup you could ask for in the entire league. And they are going to have to prove that they have any sort of spine when they just got manhandled in the in-season tournament in that one game semifinal. So I think a lot of people are going to be picking the Lakers to win on the road. And then if you're looking at the winner of the Kings Warriors, which will be a really, really fun playing game. But if you end up playing the Warriors after you've played the Lakers in a do or die scenario, it's just really tough for New Orleans. The other side of that, there's a lot of discourse about maybe the Lakers throwing this game in the Pelicans' favor, because the winner of the 7-8 matchup gets to play none other than the defending NBA champions.
Right.
So what a reward that would be to claw your way into the playoffs and get that matchup after, I mean, the Nuggets absolutely sold their chance at the one seed when they blew a 20-point lead to Victor Wembanyama in the San Antonio Spurs on Friday night. Wembanyama, 17 straight points in the third quarter, probably did the best job I've ever seen on Nikola Jokic as a one-on-one defender. which is really, really exciting for the next 5 years of the league to have those two go at it. Because Wembanyama's a rookie. And so a really cool win for the Spurs to cap off their season. Everyone is just over the moon about what Victor can be. And because of that, the Nuggets end up losing out the one seed to the Thunder. And we'll get the winner of this first play-in game, which will be a really fun matchup.
I think either way, if you're Denver, you feel like you are the king, you are the one on the throne, you are the one everyone has to bring their level up the highest and will be the underdog playing. And you have that advantage and aura, whether you're the one or the two seed. And conversely, if you're the Thunder, you have a lot to prove going into these playoffs. The only big losses that you might have to go on the road against the Thunder and lose that home court advantage in a potential third round matchup. But just speaking of Wembanyama, like, I don't know how much longer Curry, Durant, and LeBron can be like A plus premium grade players who can really bring and carry a team like almost entirely by themselves. But if they do that a couple more years with Wembanyama coming back, when the Memphis Grizzlies are back next season, the West is going to be ludicrous. As add Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and the Clippers to that old timers list. So definitely some teams you expect the trajectory to dip in the relatively near future. But as long as they keep holding off Father Time, as pro athletes from across all sports have been doing more and more frequently in the recent years, the West is going to be just insane. So a lot of questions for the Thunder, expecting to see the champs do their thing with the Nuggets, really intrigued by the 3-6 Timberwolves versus Suns matchup, just in terms of having the better team with less to proven, and I don't really know stylistically what's going to happen between these two teams. And then the Clippers Mavericks takes the cake for me, just for how much fun these matchups have been in the past. And Kyrie and Harden being on opposing teams is just a nice little bit of icing on top of that sweetness.
Yeah, there's not much to really say about this series that we've seen quite a few times already. Super stoked. I think the Clippers have the slight edge in the fact that they have more defenders to throw at Doncic and Kyrie rather than the other way around. And Doncic and Kyrie are really going to have to be forced to defend, whereas that's not as much an issue with PG and Kawhi primarily. And even James Harden, I wouldn't say is the worst matchup for Doncic. If he gets caught in a post switch, maybe out on the perimeter, it's going to be tough and he's going to be hunted a lot. But he's not a small human by any means that can really get picked on in the way that Luka will like to do sometimes. So fascinating to see what's going to happen there. But the Mavericks really have dialed up the defense in the late window here, finishing the season on a 7-1 run before resting their starters and losing the last two games.
They just did a fantastic job post All-Star break, not getting caught in that play-in race and clearing themselves a definitive spot.
And identical record, home and away. So and the Clippers almost identical as well in their records, home and away. So seems just like a really even matchup on paper that I'm super stoked for.
Wasn't there a series like a couple years back where they kept winning the road games? Like, I think the Clippers maybe broke it in like game 7, but like it went to game 6 with like a 3-3 tie, all games won on the road.
Yeah, I mean, the Mavericks, I'd say, probably have the stronger home court advantage. But I mean, it doesn't matter where Kawhi plays. He loves to rip people's hearts out.
Facts.
All right, last series that is locked in, we haven't talked about yet. And one that I think is another kind of 3-6 matchup where the 3 seed is looking for oxygen. The Timberwolves fall down late in their run and lose out on the 1 seed or the 2 seed by one game. And in part because they were trying to win that game and they lost to this Phoenix Suns team who they now draw in the first round. And what a performance from Bradley Beal, who has been running a lot of the late game stuff from Phoenix here in the last couple of games of the season, which is exciting if you're a Suns fan, and potentially signs for things to come because he's been injured most of the season. But at his peak, right, he's a guy who carried a team alongside John Wall to the Eastern Conference Finals in a given weaker Eastern Conference that LeBron ran through every year for basically 10 years. But it's just having that as your third option to pick on an Anthony Edwards, to pick on a Jordan McLaughlin or a Monte Morris or a Kyle Anderson, or on a switch, a Rudy Gobert, right? Like, in this drop coverage, these Phoenix Suns shooters are three of the best mid-rangers in the game. And that's going to be probably the biggest storyline, is however great the defensive player of the year Rudy Gobert has been, this has always been his kryptonite, a team that can shoot and expose him in that drop coverage. Karl Anthony Towns only working his way back in recently from the injury. Another guy that's going to have a lot of eyes on him as a defender against probably like a Kevin Durant at times. It's going to be extremely difficult. And Anthony Edwards, a guy who has been phenomenal all year long, but has not played well in this regular season series against Phoenix, has shot quite poorly. And guys like Derek Jr. in Dallas, and Royce O'Neal and Josh Okogie have given him some trouble. And so it's another playoffs. I mean, I don't think I've ever been less confident in picking series 1 through 8 in any of the years. It's just a testament to how stacked the league is now at this point.
Absolutely. I just love the offense, all defense. It's the Timberwolves are a bit of everything, but Gobert just colors that perception. It's so exciting.
Well, we eagerly await the play-in games coming up tomorrow and on Wednesday. But now we turn our attention to another race that has captured the hearts and minds of Toronto sports media. Auston Matthews nicely scores his way to 69 goals on Saturday night against Detroit. The results of that game couldn't matter less. And we head towards a Tuesday-Wednesday doubleheader down south in Florida, where we have a shot at seeing history, as he would become, I think, the 8th player or 9th player in NHL history to score 70 goals in a season. Has not been done in the salary cap era. That record was set by Ovechkin a number of years ago. And he has just been on another level, especially this last week, because it felt like it was in doubt. And then he just clawed his way up to 69. And that's what everyone cares about at this point in Leafs land, because they're locked into that Florida matchup. And the discourse right now surrounding everyone tonight is, do you play all your starters in the Florida game? Do you play all your starters in the Tampa game? How do you manage these last two games on a back-to-back when you know game one's probably going to be Saturday night? So not like a ton of rest that they get going into that. I don't know, Max, where do your thoughts land?
My thoughts have been more on the team still trying to make the playoffs than the Leafs at this point with everything locked in. I lean you play your guys against Florida and then give them the night off against Tampa. You have to be confident. You have to walk the walk. You have to set the tone. And that, like, it's, you're looking for every mental edge you can get. And I think not playing kind of, I see more potential harm in not playing than I see potential benefit in it. And that's where I lean. And then you don't need to play a back-to-back after that, and you can rest up for a couple of days.
Fascinating. I think the general public is actually leaning the other way, hoping that they will rest everyone against Florida, not risk playing a team that just wants to beat you up in a game that doesn't matter, and not show them anything that they can study. Go into the Tampa game, where Tampa potentially resting their starters because they're locked into their spot in the standings. It just only gives Matthews one game to try and hit that milestone, because there are parts where it's a meaningful record, and maybe you play him in both, which seems ridiculous, but it's on the table. So really curious to see what decision Sheldon Keefe's going to make. I really want him to score 70. It's just not going to matter if they lose in this first round. So I mean, such another key pivotal moment in the franchise's history that we get to witness here over the next week.
While we're pondering that, a couple of the most important games for two teams left in the East are underway as we speak, with pretty much all the teams except the Detroit Red Wings capitalizing or making the most of the opportunity that they still have. So the Pittsburgh Penguins are currently up 3-2. The Predators scored one. Crosby all over the score sheet in the first period. So Penguins trying to hang on. The Capitals lead the Bruins 1-0. And the Islanders have pulled a 2-goal lead on the Devils in the second intermission. Canadiens up 4-2. So if you're the Penguins, like, your destiny is still in your own hands. I don't think I've made it a secret. That's who I'm still rooting for at this point. The Capitals looking likely to pull it off. The Islanders.
It is
as
the
well.
Bruins.
It is. I don't know how much Boston cares. It'd be nice for them to secure, guarantee themselves that first spot in the Atlantic.
Yeah, and then you got the Flyers and Capitals playing each other tomorrow night. The Red Wings and Canadiens run it back. And then you get the Islanders Penguins on Wednesday to wrap up their season. So it's definitely possible. It's unlikely with them a point behind all three of the teams in front of them. The Flyers as well. Yeah, just hanging around in there. But what a story Sidney Crosby has been all season. And at the very least, you hope he brings that form into the World Cup next year, or Olympics, or wherever they decide to go on the international level, because we just need to see him represent us as fans one more time, even if we don't cheer for the Pens.
We've never got that pass the torch moment with McDavid, and just... it's been a bit under with McDavid doing all the stuff he's done these past 6 years. The twilight of Sid's career, I think, has been quieter than it otherwise would be. But some of the records being broken and just some reminders this year as he does what he's continued to do his entire career and just produce at a phenomenal rate. Just more and more conversations and tones I'm hearing, like, recognizing, like, what a top five player and incredible career he's continuing to have. Fuck, you never know if you make it into the playoffs what kind of damage you can do. So here's hoping.
Fingers crossed as we wrap up talking hockey here and follow the scores from tonight. And we'll finish things up with a trip to Monte Carlo. Love to go there one day, but until then we'll watch it on TV. Max, what do you got for us on the tennis side of the world?
Well, Stefano Tsitsipas has won the Monte Carlo Masters 1000 for the third time in his career, joining a list of, I think, just four players, though Nadal with 11 of those still leaves everyone else in the dust. And a really wonderful week for the Greek, who moves back into the world number seven slot. Oh, I don't think we touched on it because it was kind of when we were having a couple of off weeks, but heading into Miami, it was the first time in like tennis history or since like the Open era or something that there wasn't a player with a one-handed backhand in the top 10, because Tsitsipas had fallen out. He had risen in there before Federer fell out. And then Tsitsipas is asked, like, do you think like this is the new trend? Like, is this just going to be how it is? And he said, I bet by the end of Miami, there will be a player back in the top 10, which everyone took as him backing himself. But then Grigor Dimitrov, who has the one-handed backhander, made it to the finals and got himself in the top 10. So Tsitsipas got a little Notre Dame-ous moment. But now, with this Monte Carlo win, with 1,000 points, he jumps up into number 7, where he sits right behind Casper Ruud, who he beat in the finals around the 4,000 mark. Zverev sitting about 1,500 points ahead is where the rankings sit right now. But Tsitsipas, his form and game very suited to the clay. It's where he's strongest. He showed like a record low amount of that last season, and that trend has continued into the start of the 2024 season. But this week in Monte Carlo, he just had it all back and going for him, and you really saw why this slow, high bouncing clay court is so well suited to his game. Everything from how far back he can stand on the serve and combine his reach and athleticism to get so many balls in play, to the slight bit more time he has to take the ball on his backhand side to prepare with a slight bit more height, being more suited to how he likes to wind and load up on that one-hander, and also just giving him a little more options on if he wants to run around that ball and just smack it inside out. As much as he always has that in his toolkit, though, the confidence was there. Just the self-belief to redline that ball, not necessarily trying to paint lines all the time, but really trying to cut angles and attack, control the flow of the game. And that was, I think, most on display all week in the first set against Yannick Sinner, where he really just took the racket out of Sinner's hands at some pretty key times. And like, I would say Tsitsipas played A game and Sinner was playing his B plus, but his B plus had been enough to get him to a 24-1 record most of the year. Sinner wasn't playing bad by any stretch. He just wasn't playing out of his mind phenomenal. And it seemed like with all the advantages the court gave Tsitsipas and the mental zone he was in, with how well and consistently, how few errors and how hard he was hitting the ball, that's what it was going to take from Sinner. Yannick did a fantastic job on the ad side attacking the serve out wide, but Tsitsipas still getting just enough of those balls in play with the depth to start the rally to get some chances. And then I don't know if you heard about the controversy, though.
I don't believe I did.
So Tsitsipas plays out of his mind first set. Sinner gets it back in the second set. A bit of disappointment lingering first game of the third set. Tsitsipas gets broken. And then they play a couple marathon service games each. And then Tsitsipas in one of these on breakpoint double faults. And they miss it. So the double fault should have put him down a double break, 5-1 Sinner. Instead, the point goes on. Tsitsipas wins it. Sinner then, I think, gets broken right back, or maybe he holds once and gets broken again, starts cramping up. And he'd had like slight issues all match, but the cramps just become really obvious and unhideable for a guy with a decent poker face. And Tsitsipas just keeps breaking and ends up winning the third set, which just, if Sinner's up a double break, you've got to think.
How did they miss it?
They missed it by like inches.
Oh, because they weren't using like the normal line judges?
They use line judges, not Hawkeye on the clay.
Gotcha. Oh, wow.
Because it's the clay. And I want to like that. Like, I think it's cool to have a bit of the archaic, a bit of the here's how this like originally worked, because on clay it should be foolproof. Like, it should be very easy and almost impossible to miss. But what I think, to be fair, needs to be said is if you are an umpire and a Hawkeye is used on 80% of the tour, it just becomes hard to switch into this mode where it's not available all of a sudden, and there just could not have been a worse point for that to happen on. So I do think that is a massive asterisk on the week for Tsitsipas. But it does happen against the best player of the year so far. And there was plenty else that he did admirably that I don't want to harp on it and negate everything, because fantastic wins against Zverev, against Khachanov to get there. And then he just runs over Rudd in the finals, 6-1, 6-4. Rudd had a couple of break chances in that second set, and just, he's been in these big matches so many times now where it just feels like there's a killer instinct missing. And you wonder, like, Grand Slam finals against Nadal, Alcaraz, and Djokovic in that order, like, it, and there doesn't seem to be the development or the addition to his game. The attack the backhand meta against Tsitsipas is kind of a meme, but it's also kind of true. And on Monte Carlo, it's less true than anywhere else, but you can still see it at times with Sinner, how and why it works. But Rudd just doesn't have the firepower on that backhand, and he was tentative running around it and hitting the inside out on his forehand. And like, Tsitsipas would take some of those and put them right up the line, just not fearing Rudd's power on Monte Carlo. At least it seemed like, and it was a match that wasn't particularly close, I would say, when it was all said and done. So congratulations to Tsitsipas. He, because of how seeding works, didn't get the points in time for this week in Barcelona. So he's only number 5 in the Barcelona draw, even though he's like ahead of a couple other guys now. There, I think Rublev is number 2, and he's behind in the points now, if I'm not mistaken. But the good news is, if you're Tsitsipas, is you got put in the same quarter of the draw as Alcaraz, who then withdrew. Which does remind, like, I still think if Sinner plays his like A game, he beats that version of Tsitsipas, even on Monte Carlo. I think Alcaraz still beats him on clay. I don't know where Novak Djokovic is at. He's still climbing his gears. He didn't have super high expectations for Monte Carlo, even if the loss to Rudd was a bit surprising. It's never really been his surface, so it still feels premature to say. Nonetheless, I think the best in the world still beat Tsitsipas on clay, or the version that showed himself at Monte Carlo. Anyway, so that he's still the best player, I think, in that top seed at this week's 500 Barcelona. Oh, I think it's happening. Rafael Nadal still has not withdrawn. So right now he's primed to play his first round match in the second quarter of that draw against the Italian Cabali, which, if he wins, he would then face Alex de Minaur in the second round, which would be a banger match. Although poor Alex having to play Djokovic at Monte Carlo and then Rafa at Barcelona. It's a rough way to start your clay season. But Nadal had withdrawn at this point from all the other tournaments, so I'll believe it when I see it, but I'm hopeful that when this podcast is out, Rafael Nadal has returned to the tennis court. We still won't know what happens after the match. And then Casper Ruud sits in the third quarter, and Andrei Rublev in the fourth quarter, so eyes on Barcelona this week.
Awesome. Well, we'll wrap it up here. Just shouting out an almost semi-weekend of Max, Omax Prosper of the Dallas Mavericks with a posterization dunks. Max Homa in the Masters, almost winning that tournament, finishing in the top 5. Max Holloway laying down the gauntlet and going to town on Justin Gaethje's face.
My goodness.
And last, but certainly not least, my good friend Max and his birthday this past weekend. Thanks everyone so much for listening. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your evening.
That was very well done. Take a moment, everyone. Owen. Thanks. Till next time, Sports Next Door, signing out.
You get to the station, there's this crazy sound. Hey man, this ain't no fishing town. Yeah, they're fishing, that ain't all. They're all listening to that same old